Hi, I'm Peter Laws, and this is the Flicks the Church Forgot. Now, you may not be aware, but this podcast is now available as a YouTube show. That means that the episode that you're about to listen to is a straight audio port from the video version. The YouTube episode has images and stills from the horror film reviewed, so if you prefer that, then check out the YouTube channel called The Flicks the Church Forgot. And even better, please subscribe to that YouTube channel. However, if you prefer listening on the go, then here's the audio version coming right about now. Hi everybody, my name is Peter Laws and this is the Flicks the Church Forgot. It's the show and the podcast that explores the deeper and sometimes spiritual themes found in horror movies. Now, for the next two episodes, I'm going to be taking a quick look at two recent horror releases that attempt, I would say, to offer a new spin on the ghost story. And speaking of ghosts, before we dive into tonight's film, you might be interested to know that I'm going to be speaking at a two-day conference this September at Reading University in the UK. And the subject I'll be speaking on is, does God believe in ghosts? Now, this is a conference called the Seriously Strange Conference, and it's organized by ASAP, which is the Association for the Scientific Study of Anomalous Phenomenon. There's going to be various speakers at this event, including myself, and they'll be speaking on subjects as diverse as vampires, UFOs, and cryptozoology and all that stuff. And there'll also be live experiments and research into the paranormal, which you can watch or take part in. Now, there's also going to be a gala dinner to celebrate the 35th anniversary of ASAP. So basically, if you're interested in attending, it starts on Saturday the 10th September at 9:30 a.m. at Reading University in the UK. If you're around and you do attend, do make sure you come and say hello. I'll put the details of it in the sort of show notes, as it were. Okay, so anyway, let's dive on with tonight's movie, when I'm going to be looking at the supernatural thriller Vision, starring Isla Fisher. Now, I'm one of the many British people who can remember Isla Fisher the first time, really, from playing Shannon Reed in the Australian soap opera Home and Away. I remember that from being a kid. Since then, she's cropped up in films like Confessions of a Shopaholic and Now You See Me. But as far as I can tell, the closest she's been to a horror film is that she's appeared as Shaggy's girlfriend, called Mary Jane, I think it was, in the film version of Scooby-Doo. Well, here she finally delves into full-on spook terror with Visions, an American supernatural thriller from Blumhouse Productions. Now, many of you already know that they are the guys behind breakout horror franchises such as Insidious, Paranormal Activity, and the Sinister movies. Now, Visions is directed by a man called Kevin Greutert. I'm not sure if that's how you pronounce his name, but that's what it looks like. He edited the first five Saw films and then directed Saw 6. I really can't comment on whether Saw 6 was any good, as I literally have zero sense of differentiation between the Saw sequels. They all, to me, just seem to blend into one long torture set piece, so I'm not sure. But anyway, I can take or leave the Saw movies, by the way, though I was impressed with the first one. Here's a bit of odd personal trivia. My wife, who doesn't like horror films, absolutely loves the Saw movies. It's not even that she's into gore or anything like that. I just think she really likes the sort of the twisty, turny, almost like crime fiction plot that goes on around all of the gore. Anyway, if you think, therefore, having a director like Greutert at the helm of Visions means that you're going to get a big gore fest in this film, then you'll be wrong. This film's a much quieter and thoughtful supernatural drama, although it does have its twisted moments in it. More of that in a second. Now, in the film, Isla Fisher is a woman who's trying to come to terms with a car accident she's experienced a year ago. And it's a crash that tragically killed a child in the other car. I mean, I cannot imagine how difficult that would be to deal with. But anyway, 1 year on, she and her floppy-haired husband start life afresh by doing what everyone does when they're emotionally troubled. They start a vineyard in California. Now, this vineyard, where the story is set, I think is one of my favorite parts of the film, in the sense that the house and the landscape around it is just truly beautiful. I'd love to live there. Now, of course, this isn't the first film, horror film set in a vineyard. I guess one of the most obvious examples that I can think of is The Vineyard, which is an insane 80s movie where the guy from Big Trouble in Little China, James Hong, keeps himself young by chaining up nubile young women and making potions out of them while zombies run around everywhere. That movie, by the way, is a chaotic fever dream of 80s sensibilities. But here in Visions, the vineyard feels a little bit more like you'd expect a vineyard to feel. There are lush hills and vine leaves swaying gently in the breeze. You've got this lovely cloudless California sky. It's just a gorgeous, laid-back mood that's going on. And so it's understandable why Fisher and her floppy-haired husband thinks that this is the perfect place to move on from the trauma of last year, especially since Fisher is now 3 months pregnant herself. However, turns out that this vineyard isn't so benign. Soon, Fisher starts becoming plagued by supernatural visions. She sees a hooded figure standing on the hill. She sees somebody splashing about in pools of water, only there isn't actually anybody in the water. She sees, oddly, spectral pennies all lined up on the table, but they're not there. What on earth's going on? Is the new baby messing with her hormones and driving her crazy? A little bit like what we saw in a recent acclaimed horror film, The House on Pine Street. You can check out my review of that for my thoughts on pregnancy and horror. They are quite linked sometimes. Or might the issue be that Fisher just basically is feeling the guilt of being involved in a car crash while another child died, and so now that she's having her own child, the guilt is starting to explode within her. These are all very plausible psychological possibilities until a local medium turns up at a garden party that they throw, and the medium does what all mediums seem to do in horror films. You know the bit when they like sort of everyone's having a nice time at a party, and then the medium sort of wanders off and leaves the guests alone, and they stand in a hallway of the house staring at the ceiling in fear, followed by a sort of swivel-eyed collapse due to the bad forces that are present. And so anyway, we have this, I would say, a pretty solid setup for what at first feels like a straightforward psychological drama mixed with a bit of haunted house shenanigans. Only as the film progresses, you start to realize that there is actually something a little bit even more different happening in this particular house. It's this unexpected trajectory in the story that I think what makes Visions an interesting and enjoyable film. And speaking to my wife earlier, this is actually one of the few horror movies that after watching it, I thought, darn, I wish she could have watched that with me. I think she would have enjoyed it. Remember, she doesn't really normally like horror movies, but I think she would have enjoyed this one. And I'm being deliberately obtuse here, but my point is that this is a horror movie, but it also works as an interesting psychological thriller too. But what's also interesting is that the director's background with the Saw movies, it does actually have a moment, I think, in this film to surface. There's this bit, right, in the final third of the film. I won't tell you what it is, but it's really pretty messed up when I think about it, and I did feel that it had echoes of Saw about it. It's not gory, and it's not particularly violent, but my point is that it's almost like it's the seed of an idea that you could have imagined they would have went full whack if they'd had a Saw film. So anyway, we have an interesting story and a decent execution, which leaves you with a pretty effective little Saturday night thriller. Having said that, though, there is still some things about the film that, there are still some things that maybe make the film feel a little bit small. I don't know whether or not the film is supposed to feel like small and constricted, but in some ways it does. The various locations, the plot developments that are used, in some ways they I don't know, it just feels like it's been stretched a little bit to fill the running time. The story would have made a fantastic Twilight Zone episode, but instead the makers have drawn it out into feature length. But that isn't to say it's boring or padded. It's odd. You know, some reviewers have said precisely that the film it leaves you twiddling your thumbs a bit. I didn't really feel that. In fact, the film almost felt pretty short at 82 minutes. And I suppose what I mean is that the film isn't slow enough. They move to the place, the odd things start happening, and then we learn what it is. And some viewers are going to love the efficiency of that. But I reckon in a feature-length story, the filmmakers could have spent more time exploring some of the other aspects of the story. For example, this idea of her having the initial panic of seeing these supernatural events and yet wondering whether or not she is just actually going mad. That's an underworked angle in the film, one that some other horror films explore to really quite brilliant effect. I mean, my best example of that, I think, is one of my absolute favorite TV horror movies from the 1970s, which is Don't Be Afraid of the Dark. Check out my in-depth review of that at the podcast page. But that is a similar story to this. A couple move into a new house, a palatial house, and the woman starts to see the supernatural things going on. In this case, it's weird little creatures that bully her and pick on her. But we get this sense of paranoia that she's seeing something that might be paranormal, or she might just be going crazy. And either option is pretty scary. And this ambiguity is something, whether it's real or imagined, is something that the house on Pine Street took. I personally like that approach, the lingering sense of madness. But it's not, that vision doesn't explore that, but it just, I suppose, because it's stretched out to feature length, it could have explored that in a little bit more depth if it had wanted to. However, I do understand why they chose this path. I think for some audiences, they would just prefer to get, you know, straight on with the story rather than explore subtle themes of madness. But anyway, it's just as a result. And the film in some ways feels a little bit too lean or edited down for my taste, but maybe you'd like that. Still, though, the film moves in interesting directions, and the last half an hour particularly does move the things in an unexpected way. And it leaves you, I think, with a conclusion I found quite satisfying. I mean, it's especially satisfying for those people who are interested in alternative Fortean explanations for the presence of ghosts. I won't go into what those explanations are because I don't want to spoil the film. But I do respect horror movies that can take the classic tropes and symbols of a horror film and then turn them on their heads a little bit. And I just felt that's what this film does. It's because of this approach is why I can really see why this story got the green light for filming and why Blumhouse wanted to get behind it. Now, I can't say Visions particularly scared me or unnerved me, although I say that the look on the medium's face after she collapses in the house did give me a bit of a chill. And the character of the floppy-haired husband did feel a pretty one-dimensional and functional, but I was still intrigued by the film and the story. And put it this way, the next morning, after I'd watched this, I proceeded to outline the entire plot to my wife the next day, because I knew she probably wouldn't watch it herself, but with it being a horror movie, but I did want to tell her all about it, so I think that's a symbol that is maybe worth checking out. Although some people, some viewers might find it a little bit all too bit cozy and sort of TV movie-ish, but I thought it was fine. But there is one more thing to mention, and that is Q from Star Trek The Next Generation is in this. Only he's not wearing the funny chess piece headwear that he normally wears. I kind of think the film would have gotten extra marks if John DeLancey had just walked around as his character, just playing Q in this without any explanation. I mean, how surreal would that have been? I quite like the idea of a sort of tall-headed alien god just hanging out of this vineyard with all the other characters in this serious film without any explanation. But that's probably just my roundabout way of saying I think John DeLancey was maybe a little bit underused in this. But anyway, it's a pretty interesting film. It's worth checking out. Visions is out on DVD from Lionsgate, Certificate 15. Now, join me in the next episode where I'm going to be looking at another recent horror movie that takes a slightly left-field angle to the ghost story, where I'll be digging into spooks on a council estate in the UK in Oliver Frampton's The Forgotten. But until next time, please share and subscribe. Follow me on Twitter at RevPeterLaws or read my magazine column that explores horror movies. It's called the Reverend Reviews column, and you find that in Fortean Times magazine. But until next time, don't forget the flicks the church forgot.